yourself, connecting with yourself. I'm Angie, your host, and I'm excited because, well, I'm just gonna keep it real, all the way real. I stayed up late last night trying to finish the slides for today, and it just like wasn't coming to me, but I kind of stopped the process of being like punishing myself and freaking out, and I just went to sleep, and I just trusted that whatever was supposed to come would come. And let me tell you, for the last hour, I have been feverishly like writing stuff down, and it was way better than anything I could have forced myself to come up with last night. So I just want to start by saying that. What I want to start with is actually just releasing all expectations, like for me and for yourself. And I want to congratulate you for being here, because chances are if you're here, then you have not just struggled with connecting with yourself, but it's something that you seek to do. And I want to tell you about how I have been working on that for the last year. So just thank you for coming. I want to just really emphasize that there's usually a lot more people in the workshops, but I don't know, I'm not concerned with that, because I feel like every single person that's supposed to be here is here, and whoever this is not for, it's not for. And I'm like really, really good with that. And so I think that getting to that point, because I think before I would have focused so much on the fact that there's 7 people instead of 27 people, that I would not have been able to come up with anything of substance worth saying or worth sharing with you. And so I want to note that, because that comes back to knowledge of self, which is what we're going to be talking about today. So since we have a smaller group, that's actually really good, because I usually just say to ask yourself this question, why am I here? And then just give me one word. But since we have less people today, you can give me a little bit about why you're here and what you hope to get out of it. When it comes to what to expect, you don't have to participate in any way that you don't want to. What usually happens is I tell you the truth a little bit too raw, and so then it kind of makes other people in the space feel like, oh well, she could say that, I guess I feel okay saying this or not. You know, you don't have to share farther than you're ready to, but that usually just goes around me sharing my story and saying, this is how I got my healing. Do with it what you will. Okay, so knowledge of self. So the whole reason why connecting with yourself is the title of this workshop is because I feel like I have to work on things for about a year until I can really talk about them. And I feel like this is what I have been working on myself for the last year. And obviously it all started with the stopping of the medications, but it's grown into something now that is bigger than me. And so just to start, some thoughts on self, on knowledge of self. Plato said that the essence of knowledge is self-knowledge. Aristotle said, knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. Lao Tzu said, knowing others is wisdom, but knowing yourself is enlightenment. And these are all things that I think we have probably like in passing heard before, you know, like this whole like how important it is to know yourself. And it's pretty frequent that we hear these types of like adages or like little like sayings and not know how to internalize them. I think that's probably why you're here, is because you know that you need to know yourself, but you struggle with connecting with that person. And so I want to talk about the real journey to self-love, because self-love, I think, is something that is just like a buzzword now. It's just like this self-care and self-love are these buzzwords that people talk about when they have it, but I want to talk about how they got it. And so the very first thing that you need to know is that the real journey to self-love sounds like this, okay? First, it's self-study. Then self-study leads to knowledge of self. And then knowledge of self leads to self-acceptance. And then self-acceptance leads to self-love. It's not just I wake up and it's like self-love is not all, you know, roses and bathtubs. It's not, that's not at all, that's not at all what it is. It can be that, like those are the rewarding days. But self-love is also really, really hard to get to. And that's what I want to talk about. To understand ourselves, we need to investigate our mind and body through direct experience. And so when I say the first thing we're going to talk about is self-study. Because the only way to experience truth directly is to look within yourself. All of our lives, we have been accustomed to looking outward and seeking knowledge from outside sources. Or whether it be your mom, whether it be your teacher, whether it be... We're never taught that we already have the answers. But the truth is that we do. And so once we stop looking outward and start looking inward, that's when the self-study can begin. So we've always been interested in what's happening outside of us, you know, like, well, what others are doing, what other people think of us. We rarely ever tried to examine ourselves and our own mental and physical structure, our own actions, our own reality. And so we remain unknown to ourselves. We don't realize how harmful this ignorance is or how much we remain, you know, slaves of these forces within ourselves of which we don't even know exist. And so when we start to study ourselves, you give yourself permission to be almost like an observer. You start to observe yourself. And the inner darkness that we have inside of us, it has to be dispelled in order to get the truth of who you really are. That inner darkness is basically like a fog that's too thick to see through. And so if you want to see through that fog, there's no way out other than through it. And through it, how I'm doing that today is what we're going to talk about, because I don't have anything yet. So like I said, the inner darkness is something that must be dispelled in order to get to the truth. We got to gain insight into our own nature of who we are and why we are this way in order to understand the nature of our own existence. The entire universe and the laws of nature that it's governed by, they're all experienced in ourselves, and they can only be experienced within ourselves. So self-study, what does it mean to self-study? When you hear self-study, what do you think of? What do you think that means? So when I started to self-study myself, these are things that I'm telling you after the fact that they already happened, because I didn't know. It's not like I was like, okay, I'm going to make a plan of how to like heal. These are just things that naturally occurred in order for me to move forward, because I knew that basically what I had built my life on was bullshit. I knew that, the people in my life, the way I felt about myself, none of it was real. None of it was real because I had never allowed anyone to see who I truly was, because I was hiding. I was hiding behind what I thought people thought of me or what I should sound like. I mean, I even sometimes read, it makes me cringe sometimes when people ask me to do poetry readings and book readings sometimes. I think that's a big reason why I don't push my book so much, is because when I read those poems, those are still my experiences. But the words that I use and the way I conveyed the message was a direct result of me sitting in DPL, in the poetry lounge, and listening to poets say their poems and me thinking that's what poems needed to sound like. And so then I then turned around and, oh, are the poems good? Absolutely. But are they mine? I don't know. I don't know if they're mine or not. Because I know that the experiences belong to me, but I don't know that the words are mine. See, when you filter your experience through how you think you need to look, it changes everything. So what does it mean to study yourself? It means when you get mad or sad or experience a negative emotion or circumstance, it's an opportunity to study how you respond. Our reactions to situations of everyday living provide, you know, constant opportunities for self-knowledge and insight. By observing ourselves, we become aware for the first time of these conditioned reactions, the prejudice that cloud our mental vision, that hide reality from us, and they produce suffering. We recognize that these accumulated inner tensions that keep us agitated and miserable, and we realize that they can be removed. Gradually, we learn how to allow them to dissolve and our minds to become pure, peaceful, and happy. See, when you're examining yourself, you're examining your actions and reactions to situations in a constructive, not a hostile way. So, how self-aware do you feel you already are? When I find myself being rude, these like things that happen, they're like alarms. Something, a need that you have is not being met, which causes you to get frustrated and causes you to get short with people or need, because they're so it's like it's an alarm. Something else is happening. So I totally get what you're saying, and we're gonna talk more about it. The self-studying. So like that, like it's an opportunity. So like, instead of beating yourself up, because I don't know about you, but I tend to do that. Like if I say I was in your situation and I was rude to my man and my kid, and then instead of trying to either smooth it over or apologize, I would like beat myself up. Like, why am I like this? Why am I like this? Or like hate myself for being like this, but do nothing to figure out why I was like that. And that was when I think the shift started to kind of like happen for me. So when we observe ourselves like this, we become aware for the first time, like I mentioned, about the conditioned reactions that we have. So when you, like I said, when you are examining yourself, you have to examine your actions in a constructive and not a hostile way. So you're examining yourself with patience, that it's in like a harmonious way, like almost like as a good friend of yourself. The way you would observe a friend of yours, you don't have to like attack or be aggressive towards yourself. Constructive criticism might be required, and it can be harsh criticism if it's necessary, but the same approach in measuring or criticizing yourself that you would in the case of like your closest friend, that is how you need to approach self-study with yourself. And so that's one of the biggest, the hardest parts of self-study is being kind to yourself, because once you commit to this like journey, the whole self-study to self-knowledge, self-acceptance to self-love, it's like you're signing up for a class and you're going to discover some things you like and a lot of things you don't. And so knowing that in advance kind of prepares you for the little disappointments that lie ahead, because you don't get it right the first time. I still don't always get it right, but what I'm getting better at getting right is the aftermath of how I treat myself when I get it wrong. And that is going to make all of the difference in this whole process. So that's self-study. So first, self-study leads to self-knowledge. And what is knowledge of self? Knowledge of self is a deep personal understanding of one's own history, capabilities, character, feelings, and motivations. So it's a gradual process, which is really, really difficult at the beginning, but it slowly leads to an understanding of your deeper self, your real self, your authentic self, the self that's you, that is not tainted by anyone else. Ultimately, your inner child, because that person that was who you are, that liked what you liked, that did what you wanted to do, that said what you wanted to say, that wore what you wanted to wear, that you, before any outside influences came in and told you who you should be, or what you were, or what you could wear, or what you couldn't wear, or what you could say, or how you could talk. All of that's the person we're looking for, connecting with that person, because there are two selves that we have. There's the self that I'm talking about, that authentic self, and then there's the self that we send out to make sure that authentic person doesn't get hurt. So I want each of us, let's just be completely real. I'm gonna tell you a little bit about that self, that second self for me. That person projects herself to be extremely confident. She goes into situations extremely nervous, but knowing how to make it appear as though she's not. I'm gonna stop saying she. I know how to paint my face so that I can look done and presentable and beautiful in the way that I want to be perceived. She knows how to, she doesn't always know how to mask her anger. When attacked, I can be vicious, but it's only because I'm so hurt. So you start to see that the way you operate, that you're basically your operating system, like, you know, it, your automatic response to pain is to lash out. And then you start to see, like, so we can ask ourselves, like, oh, who am I? What, like, you, when you start to self-study, you're like, oh, okay, well, this is how I am. I tend to lash out when I'm hurt. I tend to isolate. But all of these I tend to's, all of those things can be changed with this process. It's not going to be overnight, but those things can be changed. What this work is trying to integrate these two people, because both of them are you. Both of those people are you. And integrating them means honoring the fact that you're not always that person that you send out. It means accepting the fact that the person you send out, you don't have to have a person you send out. You can just show up as you are every single time. And that's where I'm trying to get to, even though I still struggle with that. So the anxiety with simple tasks, I respond to that. I mean, I relate to that because you also feel this some level of embarrassment of feeling anxious about these simple things that you think no one else feels like this about. Like, why is it so hard for me to clean my room? Like when you think that other people don't struggle with that. But let me tell you, I'm here the first person to tell you that it's a lot more common than I think we realize. So the question that I started with asking myself when I started going to my energy healing cleanses, and so the first thing I started with was admitting that my life was out of control. You know, I used to think that my life would get better when X, Y, or Z happened, or when I achieved this or that, but my life has taught me that nothing gets better until I decided to heal where I'm at, period. Like, the first thing that started was that I hit rock bottom. I was in CVS. I always tell the story, and I'm like, I don't know why I was in CVS when the lightning bolt hit me, but I was filling my fifth prescription, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, five antipsychotic medications, like, and amphetamine. Like, it was just like, what am I doing? Like, I literally, like, the doctor gives me a prescription, and then I don't even question it, and I just go fill these prescriptions and keep putting this shit into my body. And that's when I kind of hit rock bottom. And then I started I just decided when I got home, like, that's it, I'm not taking anything. And then that's when I was like, oh, I can't do this alone. And so I started to reach out, and I found the spiritual energy cleanses. And from there, it led to me finding a new therapist, because the therapist that I had gone with for so many years was a white woman who I feel like Glory said that did not just, I, she didn't understand me, just period. She just didn't understand me. And so how could I allow a person to continue basically dictating my life who doesn't understand me? It's like, how can I do that to myself, you know? And it's really because I didn't value myself. So that led to DBT class, which is dialectical behavioral therapy. And people who are diagnosed with what I'm diagnosed with, which is like everything, bipolar, but BPD, which is borderline personality disorder. And borderline personality disorder is often caused by emotionally neglectful parents. And so it's a disorder of basically just attachment. You have like really anxious attachment styles to people and things, and you have extreme fear of abandonment, and you can't self-regulate your emotions. You're unable to cope with any negative experience, no matter how big or small. And I didn't know that any of these things were a problem, because how many of you have just kind of like been told, or just like, maybe, because I think at some point we have all observed ourselves and been like, well, that's just how I am. And you even excuse your behavior by saying, that's just how I am. Or like, why you invite me if you know how I am, you know? Like, this whole idea that we just are how we are, and the things, the bad things, the things that trigger us, all of these things are just set in stone, is a core belief that we have to change if we want to move forward. And so I started to ask myself, you know, like, why don't I know myself? And what I kept continuously asking every time I got like learning things in DBT class or learning things in therapy, I kept saying, well, why do I, so I admit that I have depression, I admit that I have anxiety, I admit that these things are true about me, I admit that I have a hard time coping, but why do I have a hard time coping? And that is what sparked this kind of like deeper desire to know myself, but not just know myself of how I am, but know why I am this way. And so for me, the honest answer is I had an emotionally neglectful mother. Completely. I lived primarily with my mom, and she was extremely emotionally neglectful. She was constantly, you know, out at the casinos playing, or on a trip with some rich man, or wherever she was, she just wasn't there. And so I was alone a lot. And so it was, what's interesting about my specific childhood is that there were moments that I felt very, like I had affection, because I was basically my mom's emotional support kid. Like an emotional support animal. Like when she wanted it, or when she felt like she needed cuddles or hugs, great. You have a little 5-year-old kid that you can just do that with. But then when you don't want to, or when you don't feel like it, what happens to the kid? When they need that, or when they want it and they seek it, that leads to you having an anxious attachment style as an adult. And why I could not figure out why I continuously seeked out these people who were emotionally unavailable. The reason was because my mom was the first person who taught me how to love, or didn't, confused the fuck out of me and made me think that this is what love felt like. And so instead of going and seeking out healthy relationships, I started to gain this codependency thing that I had learned from my childhood. And what it led to was this, like, the people pleasing thing, the inability to say no, ignoring my intuition, or constantly questioning myself, or overthinking about what the result of my behavior would be, because I was constantly worried about how my mom would react to my behavior. Because when you have a parent who basically just dismisses or ignores you, you then, there's different ways, but the way that I went was to become an overachiever just to get any semblance of recognition from her. And so I thought that I had to be this, like, if I was going to be anything, because my mom wouldn't show up to open house or to come see me do something at school, but she would show up if I got the president's award. So I got the fucking president's award, like, every year in elementary school, because that was the only way my mom would show up. And it was sad and hard for me to watch these parents come and like, and even then she would come to see my name get called and then she would bounce. And so it was like I was in this constant state of being like, mommy, mommy, look at me, look at me, look at me. And then I'm confused as to why I'm doing the exact same pattern with every single man that I've ever loved. And so it wasn't until therapy that I was able to put these things together and see the overlap and be like, oh. But the thing about it is that once you get to these realizations, it's really hard and it's really painful, but it's also very, very liberating. To know yourself is to free yourself from all of the things that you think just are the way they are. All the things you think are out of your control. All of the behaviors you wish you could stop doing, but somehow you keep abandoning yourself. And you keep dishonoring yourself by doing things that you know go against what's in your best interest. That includes staying in relationships or friendships or jobs that don't serve you or make you feel like shit every day. And those are really easy things to say, because let me tell you, I left my job and that shit has gone downhill. Like, it's not been an easy process, but I can tell you that I'm a lot happier than I was, and I'm 90% closer to feeling like I don't want to kill myself. And that's where I was with the way I was living. And so when I asked myself, why don't I know myself? You know, for me, emotional neglect led to a false identity. I was told who I was and I lived up to it. I was told by my family and by my mom that because when I would throw fits, I was told that I was highly dramatic, that I was extra, that I was a ham. But you know what a ham means? It means like a person who is like just overdoes it, or you know, is a little bit too like kind of like a little theater kid. That's kind of like how I was. And the reason was is because I was desperately trying to get my mom to pay attention to me. And even if the response that I got was negative, it was attention either way. And when you're thirsty for that, you'll do anything to get it. And so these things led to my core beliefs about myself. So when other people tell us who we are, we begin to internalize that. And these false core beliefs start to become our own beliefs about ourselves, and then we start to live up to them. That's what happened for me. Our core beliefs influence the development of our attitudes, rules, and assumptions. Our beliefs can hold us hostage, which create a constant cycle of worry and overthinking and self-doubt. And as you go through life experiencing the world, you unconsciously interpret, judge, feel, and figure out what things mean using these basically like, you know how they people say like rose-colored glasses? Well, these are like shit-covered glasses. You can't even see shit because it's like all this bullshit is in front of you. I'm sorry that I don't have like technical words to explain shit. I'm just telling you my experience. And so what I want us to do right now is I would like for you to write down a list of the five most common negative. This is important that they're negative. The five most common negative titles that people have given you through your life. List more if there are more, but which one? I want you to make a list of five and reflect on which ones are true, which ones are not, and whether or not you've lived up to them. So we'll put let's put 5 minutes. 5 minutes on the clock. Thank you. So, you know, these core beliefs, I want you to internally, like, or, you know, you don't have to share this with us, but I want you to ask yourself, you know, which of these things are true, which of them are not true, and which of them have I lived up to, you know? Because, for example, like, I did an entire TED Talk on having ADHD, and then I recently, and I kind of basically just, like, stuck to this idea that because I had ADHD, these are all of the things, that there's a list of things that I'm good at and things I'm not good at, and if something that you asked me to do falls in the category of things I'm not good at, I fucking panic, and I can't do it, and I need help, and I can't, it's overwhelming, how am I going to be able to do that? I have ADHD, I can't, people with ADHD can't do that. Like, do you see how that limiting belief controlled my life? And I want you to ask yourself if any of those things that you mentioned, if those things have controlled your life. So, you know, these guiding questions that, you know, people, when they talk about self-love, like, they say, like, do you love yourself? Do you like yourself? You know, like, but the question needs to be, like, do you know yourself? Because we've already established that the road to self-love is not just, like, just one step. You know, we know that it's first self-study, then it's a self knowledge, or self-study and self-discovery are like the same thing, and then self-knowledge, and then self-acceptance, and then self-love. So what does it mean to know yourself? If you don't know yourself, you can't be honest about who you are and what your needs are. You just can't. So what it means to know yourself is knowing the simple things, like likes, dislikes, interests, hobbies, but also your memories, your experiences, your history, and also what your values are and what your character is. Because no one can tell you that for yourself. No one can tell you who you are. And I think that that's a big theme here today, is that many of us have been told who we are. And we need to spend, from this day forward, we need to spend the rest of our lives telling the world who we are. No more of that. No one else is going to tell you how you are, who you should be, or this is who you always were as a kid, because those things are irrelevant now. This is a new chapter, and this starting of season of self is what I'm going to ask you to do with me today, is start yours with me, even though many of you are already in it, but I want you to officially declare it, and we're going to get to that at the end. So not only knowing how you are, but knowing why you are this way. And, you know, why is knowing yourself and connecting to yourself important? Because you matter. And because without connecting with yourself, you can't connect to anyone else. And without connecting to yourself, you never really live your life. You're just experiencing your life as it's happening to you. And that's no life. That's no way to live a life. So getting to know yourself. I'm going to share my screen so you can see this. You can just take a picture of it or whatever. But these are some... These are some, how do I, some questions that you can ask yourself. So questions, if you don't know where to start, these are some starting off points that you, and definitely not all at once. Like, this is like a one question, like, a month. Like, that's how long this journey takes. Because when you ask yourself the question, where do I come from? It's not just as simple as I was born at Pasadena at Huntington Medical Center. It's so much more than that, and you know that. And so I don't mean that you go through this like in rapid fire asking yourself these questions and then trying to get the answer. I mean, like, deeply spending time on answering these questions. So some of them are, where do I come from? Who do I come from? That's a year on its own. What were the circumstances of my birth? Like, you know, it's, what kind of childhood did I have? How does it affect me today? Because the true and real shit of it is that I was an unplanned pregnancy. And I can tell you that as I grew, I felt that. I knew that I wasn't wanted. I knew that I might not have been wanted, but when I got there, like, they were happy to see me. But it's also a real deep kind of like, all right, here, you know, like, I'm going to treat you the best that I can because you're here, but I didn't plan for you to be here. And that was a sense that, like, a huge kind of like sense that I got. What are my hobbies? What are my interests? Where do I feel most happy? How do I feel right now? What do I need right now? What makes me anxious? What are my triggers? Who triggers them the most? How do I feel when I'm around? Literally, you should ask yourself this question for every single person in your life. How do I feel when I'm around them? And if you don't feel anything, that's also a problem, because that's you dissociating from your life. The feeling of no emotions is not a good thing. That's sometimes like people will take like antidepressants or whatever, and because they're in pain, their life is painful, and so the antidepressants then make them feel nothing, and they think that that's better, but it's not. It's just a pause button. You just basically pause your life. And so the real thing about learning who you are and connecting with yourself is finding the patterns in your life. And so asking yourself, these are just some of the questions. I know you can add so many to these questions, but these are just jumping off points. Because to get to know yourself is the first step towards self-love. We've already established that. So getting back to this part, so the thing that I was telling you about the DBT class and the therapy, then it my energy cleanses, I started to be told to make a self-love altar. And so I started kind of like making an altar to honor myself and who I am and where I come from, and to start to study those things. And it was very like cathartic to like go through old stuff and like try to find things that I felt had meaning to me and put them on my altar. Because that in itself is a therapeutic experience, because you're looking for the meaning in your life. And I think a lot of us go through our lives not looking for the meaning in our lives because we're afraid that there is none. And that can be crushing. So after I started this, like, because what this really, self-mastery, what it really is about, I'm learning, is about practicing spiritual hygiene. And the same way you got to brush your teeth every day, otherwise you're going to get cavities. That's the same thing. You need to have a daily practice, whether that means tending to your... At first, for me, before I started my sunset ceremony, it was tending to my altar. It was like making sure there was no dust on it. And if something was out of space, like putting it back. And it was having something sacred to me. Something that only I could take care of, something that was only mine, something that only I understood. It was the first kind of like the first little connection I could make with myself. And when I started this journey of, you know, trying to learn how to manifest things, or also just like bringing these things into my life, because that word kind of like, when people start to overuse words, I'm like, give me the thesaurus, I want another word now, because like, you know, they overuse that word manifesting. But bringing these new things into my life and starting this foundation that I talked about, towards living a life that I felt I loved, was foundationally understanding that none of these things could happen without first the desire to heal. And so then that kind of moved me towards my ceremony, because I was having so much chaos in this house, like with quarantine, like, you know, I left my house at 19 and I just didn't even look back. I went and lived my life for like 10 years until I started like falling on kind of like financially hard times and everything, and came to live with my mom again. And but so coming back to live with my mom and having no buffer, because the medicine was the buffer of me not having to feel anything, I was like thrust into the situation where I had to either deal with it or kill myself. Those were my two options. And because we're in quarantine, like, y'all already know, like, how, depending on what your circumstance is, everyone's household is different. Everyone's like, there's not always harmony in a house. And so for some people, when we come home, we don't want to. And so home is not always a place that you can count on to be warm and loving. And so it's up to you to make it that place for you. And so the only way out of that problem of feeling like so disconnected from my mom and being so angry and feeling all those things, the only way out of it was through it. And I started to get through it by, you know, having my daily practice of practicing the spiritual hygiene of being like, when I start to feel like I'm about to explode, instead of exploding, I'm going to go hiking. I'm going to go watch the sunset. I'm going to go do something to give myself a little bit of a release so that when I come back to this place that triggers the fuck out of me, I am a little bit more in control of how I respond, because I had been self-studying for a little bit. And I had been like, oh, every single time I don't go to my little sunset ceremony, I notice that there's way more friction in the house. And I can't control what my mom does. I can't control the fact that she don't want to go to therapy. I can't control the fact that she doesn't want to deal with her shit. Only thing I can control is me. And that was very liberating for me. And so the self dates, like spending time with myself, has been everything for me. It was, and I want this to be very clear. Somebody DM'd me and asked me, like, how do you move past the anxiety of doing things alone? And the answer is, you don't. You are anxious the whole fucking time, until maybe a couple months later, where you start to look forward to it. And you're like, it's, there's no shortcut. It's only like doing the hard, when they say like, oh, you got to do the work. It's like, well, what is the work? The work is doing things that you don't want to do, or things that don't always feel good right now, but you know will have a great payoff later. That's it. There's no way to stop feeling anxious other than to move through the thing that makes you anxious, until you, so that you can see that the real thing that you were anxious about is not the thing you were going to do. It's the problem you haven't dealt with yet. So connecting with yourself. Most of us know what it means to connect with others, but struggle to connect with ourselves. So like when you can, you know what it's like to be connected with others, right? Because you know that it feels good. Like with, when you can connect with a person, you have a friend or a kid or a parent or a uncle or somebody who you connect with that just gets you, someone you like to be around, you know, like, you know that energy feels good. That's the same way it feels to connect with yourself. That's the goal, is to feel like you are someone you want to spend time with. It's really not that like not that complicated in that way, you know, like, you enjoy that person, you like them, you want them around, you love them, you protect them, you keep their best interest in mind. The same goals for yourself. That's what the goal of connecting with yourself is to like yourself, is to accept yourself, so that you can move forward to self-love. So I just want to say congratulations. You have entered your first phase of self-study. I mean, I'm sure you've already studied yourself, but now today you are officially starting. And because of that, I would like for you to sign a contract. I'm going to show you this contract that I came up with, and I kind of wrote it for myself, but yeah, here, I'll read it to you. Okay, so what I'm going to want you to do is, I'm going to want you to basically copy this down, but first just listen. I'm going to read it to you in the way I wrote it. So, I, Angela Aguirre, hereby declare that today, the 15th day of November 2020, I have officially entered into my season of self. Today, I commit to my own healing. I commit to learning myself so deeply that no one can ever again tell me who I am, how I feel, or what my experiences are. I commit to learning everything there is to know about me, the good and the bad, so that I may heal the wounds I carry. I understand that my wounds may not be my fault, but my healing is my responsibility. I commit to that responsibility now. I understand that in order to move forward toward a life I love living, I must process the pain inside the wounds I carry in order to extract the lesson that will get me to the next level of my growth. I declare here and now that healing, not pain, is the foundation upon which I will build my life. I, Angela Aguirre, being of sound mind and body, confirm that I understand this means willingly walking toward pain, not running from it. It means honoring myself and my needs, especially when it's hard. It means speaking up for myself, being kind and patient with myself, and it also means rewarding myself when necessary. I, Angela Aguirre, understand this is a lifetime commitment, and that I am now playing the long game. I pledge to work toward my growth every single day and to take breaks when I need them. Here and now, I declare sovereignty over my life. So, if you don't feel comfortable signing a lifetime contract, I understand. But this is just essentially what I what I see for us. You know, I see this for myself. This is something that I signed on my own. But the way these workshops work is I just tell you how I got mine, and you can see however that applies to your own life. But I think that this type of thing, and also if you do decide to sign this contract, it's important that you read it out loud to yourself in the mirror. Because you need to know that you are committing to, you're basically entering into a relationship with yourself. You're first, the self-study is, you know, the same way you would study a partner when you first get to know them. You're watching what they do, why, who they are, what are they like, how are they, you know, what's their story. And for a long time, a lot of us have been neglecting ourselves because, you know, that codependency and that, that, you know, never feeling like enough, and that stuff causes us to neglect ourselves. When we people please, it causes us to neglect ourselves. When we're so much worried about what other people think of us that we neglect our needs so as to live up to their standards. So if you want, you can take a picture of it. But this activity is really important to do in the mirror. And so I would like for you also to, you can make it pretty and like put it on your bulletin board or whatever, but what I want to do also before I just feel called to share this poem, because so there's the self-contract and then there's the letter to yourself, which will come after the contract. And the letter to yourself will be based off of my poem that I'm going to read now, called Dear Angela. And I just feel like it's something that I want to bring into the space, because I need you to know how deeply painful this process has been of confronting all of these things. But I cannot stress enough how rewarding it has been. The rewards you get from doing this work are incomparable to anything you could ever achieve, anything you could ever, any weight loss goal, anything you can ever do with your life. There's nothing more rewarding or powerful than this. And so as you reflect on that, I'm going to read this poem, and then we can kind of have our closing remarks and go our separate ways. Dear Angela, you are divine. A gift from God, a light in the darkness, you are a miracle. The perfect verse over a dope beat, you are the greatest love story ever told. The greatest woman to ever live in your skin, you are phenomenal. The way you love others should be the blueprint you use to love yourself. You deserve to be loved wholly, worshipped like the goddess that you are. You deserve to be loved. I say this again because you seem to forget it so often. You are worthy of the same quality of love you give everyone else. Angela, your heart is an ocean. It is deep and full of life. It is so immense that parts of it have not yet been explored, and that is okay. Stop trying to give it away so easily and without collateral. You deserve an ocean in return. Stop settling for puddles. Stop trying to love them into lakes. Angela, you are enough. Without your poems, without your book, without your TED Talk, without your talented friends, without a man in your life, without a job with benefits, you alone are enough. No matter how broken your Spanish is, no matter how many colleges book you or not, no matter how many students you reach, or how popping your highlight is, or if the wings of your eyeliner are even or not, you alone are enough. Why is this so hard for you to believe? Is it because your father left? Is it because your mother was never taught how to be one? You are not a mistake. Yes, you have made many. Each has brought you closer to today. That's something else you need to know, mija. The most important day in your life will always be today. Too often you let your depression rob you of it. Dear Angela, stop letting your depression rob you. Depression is just possession without all the religion attached. You can fight the darkness, but only with the light. Learn how to find it. Dear Angela, I know you so often feel stuck in the space between mediocrity and greatness. Let me make myself clear. There is nothing mediocre about you. Fear is the enemy of greatness. Stop letting it hold you back. Fear is quicksand. It will swallow you whole if you let it. Do not let it trick you into forgetting who you were born to be. Stop letting questions consume you. Time is better spent looking for the answers. To find them, look within. You already have inside you everything you need to survive this. One day you will learn to heal yourself, and when you do, it will be glorious. Dear Angela, you are still a poet, even when you haven't written in months. Your worth is not determined by your productivity. You are eternal. You will live forever through your words. Decades from now, a little brown girl with broken Spanish just like yours will do a book report on you. She will open your book and it will transform into a mirror. She will see herself reflected back at her in your story, and she will know that hers matters. On presentation day, she will be nervous, but she will stand in front of her class anyway and recite this poem aloud. She will replace your name with her own, and the self-doubt will fade away. The little brown girl will know in that moment that she is unstoppable. Dear Angela, you are important. Your work is important. Your life is important. And I know you don't believe that right now, but if you just fight the darkness a little longer, I promise you will find the light again inside yourself. I promise you will learn to shine it on the world. And when you do, you will thank me for writing this. You will know that it saved you. Love, Angela. So, thank you. I just want to just send you with so much love and just appreciation. And I want to unmute you guys so we can just be here together. But I just thank you because I need you to know that so much of this is for me. In order to, I didn't have a space to release, and so I made one, and I was lucky enough to be received with so much love and find a community of other people who are trying to heal themselves at the same time. And it's been the most beautiful journey, painful but beautiful. And I want you to know that it's possible to move from darkness into light. No matter what that means for you, whether you're in darkness right now or not, I appreciate you for being here. And yeah, does anyone have anything they want to say or share? Or if you need me to put up the contract again, I can do that. But the last assignment will be for you to fill out that contract, read it to yourself in the mirror, and then after this workshop, whenever you feel moved to, I need you to write your poems. It doesn't have to be a poem, just a letter to yourself, because in that moment, I wanted to die. And something in me, my higher self, wouldn't let that happen. And so she spoke life into me, and I want you to connect with yourself. Not that one you send out, but that one you know is in there. Connect with her, and she'll guide you.